with a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Everyone, welcome to Momicide Podcast. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Kristen.
We are two moms who discuss the world's most intriguing and intricate true crime cases. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today, we're going to do a little Q&A with questions that you asked us on Instagram. And we're just going to get right into it with the basics. So, hey, Kristen.
Hey.
Tell me a little bit about you.
So my name is Kristen. I'm 29 years old. I'm a boy mom to two boys. My first son is Brady. He's almost 3 years old. And my youngest son is Cameron, who is 6 months old. I do makeup artistry, eyelash extensions, and microblading. And I work from home in my home salon. What about you?
Yeah, so I'm 30 years old. I'm also a boy mom. I have one son. His name is Bennett. He's just over a year old. And I work for the government with youth.
Awesome. So next question is, how did this become a thing and why did you choose each other to do this podcast?
So how did it become a thing? We've known each other since elementary, technically, but we haven't been super close. But for all of my big events, you've done my makeup. Like you said before, you're a makeup artist. Yeah. So like for
we talk on social media all the time.
Yeah. And
about
I think
mom stuff.
Yeah. I think it's like a mom thing. Like once you become a mom, you just sort of talk to people who like maybe you hadn't connected with previously.
Absolutely.
So I've
like connected with so many like random people just over mom stuff.
Yes, exactly. And some of my non-mom friends don't really get it. They're like, wait, you talk to so-and-so?
I know. They don't get it. You don't get it until you get it.
Yes.
So it's a real thing.
Yeah, I think we both just started to realize our mutual love for crime through like talking back and forth and messaging on social media. You would share like Instagram stories about podcasts and I'd message you like, you have to listen to this podcast. Mm-hmm. And you would message me back. And I think it honestly, the main conversation started with you had told me about the podcast Hunting Warhead.
Yes.
Which I am obsessed with.
It's a hard one to listen to. Oh, it's very interesting, but it's disturbing.
It was so...
It's called Hunting Warhead.
I could not stop listening to it. It was extremely disturbing as a little disclaimer, but we started talking about it. We would chat back and forth. And then we kind of just started talking about the idea of starting a podcast, but we weren't really serious about it.
It was more like a dream.
Yeah.
Like, we were hey, like, oh, you want to do this? Yeah, we want to do it, but like not right now, maybe someday.
Yeah.
And then like, it just sort of turned into like, okay, let's just like get the ball rolling. And then here we are, like literally.
We kind of just on a whim just decided to do it, and then we started designing a logo, and then once the logo was designed, I feel like we were like, okay, yes, we're gonna do this.
There was no turning back after that.
Yeah, I feel like we kind of both just answered that question, so I'll move on to the next one. Okay. So the next one is, what are our plans with the podcast, and do we only plan on talking about moms who kill?
So no, we don't only plan on talking about moms who kill. We plan on covering all sorts of true crime cases, worldwide and Canadian. We forgot to mention in the beginning that we're both Canadian. So we plan on covering all true crime cases, unsolved, solved, ongoing, relevant in the media, everything. It's not just going to be moms who kill, although that does fit in well with our theme and we will cover some, but it's not just going to be that. Do you want to add anything?
Yeah, sure. So we kind of just tied in, I think we tied in the mom because we're both moms and it's kind of just a play on words like homicide, momicide. Yeah. So yeah, I think just to add, we want to cover, you know, also not just mainstream media cases. We really want to cover, you know, cases involving people of color and Indigenous people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not just the ones like, you know, the picture perfect white families that are covered on media.
Exactly. The ones that are forgotten about and overlooked.
Yeah, exactly. Sadly. But yeah, we want to kind of, you know, get into everything and really do a deep dive into all things true crime.
And also touch a little bit on the psychology behind it as well, because we both find that super interesting.
Yeah, we can't, you know, we're in the beginning stages and we have a couple ideas that we've thrown out there that we want to talk a little bit about, you know, the minds involved in these crimes and, you know, what is their thought process or lack thereof or whatever's going on. So,
yes. So next question is, how did your passion for true crime start?
I love this question because it really had me thinking about when it started. I just feel like it's always been a thing. I honestly think that it started with the JonBenet Ramsey case because I can't remember how old I was at the time, but it was just one of those cases like Casey Anthony that was everywhere. Like everywhere you looked, at the grocery store. I remember though, do you remember those National Enquirer like magazines where they would, it was kind of like a 90s version of clickbait. Like they would say like Ramsey ransom letter reveals killer or like whatever on the front page. Yeah. And those headlines would really get you involved in the case.
Yeah.
I think my dad probably had a part in my obsession with true crime because he has always been obsessed with it. And he essentially listens to it when he falls asleep. So I guess to kind of...
A good bedtime story.
Yeah, exactly.
Soothing.
I guess to kind of conclude, I would say I don't know exactly when, but I can definitely remember being super interested in the JonBenet Ramsey case and just the details that went into that and the fact that it was unsolved. So yeah, I feel like it's been a forever thing, but I can't pinpoint exactly, but. Right.
It's funny because like how crazy popular that case is, I don't know much about it.
Yeah, true.
It was one of those things that it's like, I don't know, it's just been, I feel like it's like an older case too.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like I shockingly don't really know. I know like the basics, but I don't really know like the dirty details of that case. So
yeah.
I would like to find out because people seem to be very intrigued by it. So my passion for true crime also started with my mom, your dad. My mom. my mom is incredibly obsessed with true crime. Like, she literally lives and dies for it. Like, you should hear her talk sometimes. Like, the way she just can ramble off these facts about every single case.
Yeah.
Like, every case. I'm not joking. I don't know how she knows these facts off the top of her head, but she knows every single true crime case back and forth. And when I was growing up, she always had like serial killer books on the bookshelf. And I mean, as a child, I didn't care, but like it was just always around. She would I would fall asleep as a child with her downstairs listening or watching Law and Order on TV. So like the theme song for Law and Order is permanently burned into my head.
That like doo doo.
Yes. Yes, that's like comforting to me, that song. It's like a childhood memory. That and X-Files. Like
yes.
X-Files used to, like, that theme song with, like, the hand going down the screen. Yeah. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I
used
remember.
To fucking terrify me.
Yes.
Like, terrify me. And my, like, dad thought it was hilarious, and he would blast it when I was trying to sleep at, like, 5 years old. So, anyways, it's just always been a part of my childhood and upbringing. And I didn't really start getting into it until, like, I don't know, probably, like, my teenage years where I really started to, like, pay attention. But yeah, it's like literally in my blood and
it's in your genes.
It totally is.
It was destiny
for sure.
Okay, so the next question is, do your family or friends think it's weird that you're so crime obsessed?
My close family and friends already know that I'm obsessed, so I feel like they just expect it from me. It's not weird anymore. I definitely have some friends and clients who I talk to who definitely find it weird. Like you can just tell the vibe when you're talking to certain people about things that they're just not into it. They think it's weird and creepy and like it makes them super uncomfortable and like It's fine.
You're just testing the water. Did you hear about this murder?
Right. And they're not into it. And I'm like, okay, like, it's fine. They don't get us.
But, yes. No. Which is fine. It's fine. But I mean, I feel like those people aren't listening. So
they just don't care about interesting topics. So.
So yeah, I think same here. My family definitely doesn't think it's weird. As I said before, my dad, he has always been obsessed with true crime.
Do you and your dad talk about cases all the time?
Do you know what? We haven't really before, but since I told him, you know, about the podcast and we've been talking about it, he's like, Amanda, like, you got to cover this one. Like, got to do this one.
Yeah.
I think prior to this, I don't know if he really knew about how obsessed I was.
Really?
I don't think he knew that I was, like, you know, playing podcasts 24/7 when I was going for walks or cooking or driving back and forth to work or whatever. But I think my friends, I don't really talk about it with my friends, but since kind of revealing that we were starting the podcast, I've been a little shocked to learn about a few of my friends who also listen to true crime podcasts that I had no idea.
Really?
Yeah, one friend.
It's like a society.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's kind of opening some doors in terms of, you know, conversations and some people who are super excited for me and us.
Yes.
My husband definitely initially thought it was kind of weird. He's not a podcast guy. He's not like a documentary guy. He's more of, you know, if he's watching TV, it's, you know, sports or golf or whatever. And he's listened to a couple podcasts before, but they're like bro podcasts, like ones that, you know, are just like shooting the shit, like not really talking about much. Yeah. So, but he knows that it's a part of my life, and he's heard the, you know, the stories in the background when I'm cooking dinner or whatever.
Yeah.
And we'll kind of be, you know, we'll call each other on the way home from work, and he's like, you know, how was your day, blah blah blah, and he can tell I'm kind of trying to cut the conversation short. I'm like, okay, well, I'll see you when I get home. He's like, yeah, okay.
I have a podcast to get back
like,
to.
Yeah, he's like, go listen to your podcast, babe. Yeah. He just knows that it's just a part of my life. So
yeah,
I mean, yeah, I would say the people who would think it was weird, we're probably not super close because,
yeah,
you know, it's just a part of our being.
Right. Yeah. It's the same with Nick too. Like, my partner, he was never like a true crime person. Like, I'm sure he probably like heard, like, you know, the main ones in the news and that sort of thing. But like, he was never like big into it until he met me. And now that it's like all I ever want to watch with like documentaries and that sort of thing, he definitely like hears a lot more about it, and he'll like engage in the conversation and try to like share his opinions and stuff. Mm-hmm. But seldom is he ever the one to like initiate, oh, let's turn on this crime documentary. Like,
yeah,
that's always me. But when we do watch them, he will get super into it.
Yeah,
and then
totally.
He'll like want to like go off on his own and like start Googling things.
Yes.
But yeah, he definitely is not one to like be into it. Like Richard, like he's like definitely like a big sports guy. So
we're slowly converting them to the when I had a couple of documentaries on, just I've watched every documentary possible about this case, and when I had them on, I could slowly see him, you know, he'd be not really paying attention, and then he'd start paying attention.
So when you say this case, you're talking about Casey Anthony?
Yeah, sorry. Yes. The one that we're going to start off with, Casey Anthony. And he started to get into it. He started asking me questions, and to the point where he was sitting down, like, put his phone down and was, like, really paying attention to what was going on, so.
I mean, how can you not?
I know.
It's so fucked.
He just couldn't believe the events that took place, so.
Okay, so next question that we were asked is, what are your passions other than true crime?
So, I mean, sounds cliche, but my family and spending time with my son and also my parents and my siblings, but also volleyball. So I play volleyball in a rec league. It sounds weird to say senior because I'm 30, but I think that's what it's called. It's like a seniors league. And also I don't know how this started, but since having a baby, I've kind of developed this passion for cooking and finding new recipes and really challenging myself in terms of making food well and using different spices and looking up new recipes, which doesn't sound like something super exciting, but that's something that's, you know, I look forward to, like making a new supper.
Me too.
Yeah, and I know you share that passion as well.
It's just like the motherly instinct to feed our families nutritious food, I
think. And delicious. Nutritious and delicious.
So my passions are, there's a couple that are similar to yours, obviously, like cooking. I enjoy cooking. Being a mom, especially being a boy mom, like I never thought that I would be a boy mom, but since I am, it's become something that I'm super passionate about, is just raising good men. Especially since I'm so jaded with this whole true crime thing and like men being assholes.
White men especially.
And in this day and age, it's just, it's so much has changed in society, and we're just becoming more inclusive and kinder and smarter. And yeah, so that's a passion of mine, just to raise my boys to be good humans.
I love that.
Yeah.
That we need more of that in the world.
100%. Especially with boys, I feel.
Oh, totally. We're both raising white men.
Yes.
So
yeah.
We have to raise them to be aware of,
you know. And emotional, too. Like, that's like a big thing.
To be comfortable with themselves and comfortable feeling and expressing themselves and standing up for, you know, when something is happening that is wrong, something is unjust, you know, speaking up.
Absolutely.
Being a parent, there's so much that comes with being a parent.
There is. You learn like a whole other side of yourself.
Yeah,
when
totally.
When you become a mom.
Okay, so what is your favorite thing about being a mom?
Well, I enjoy having like fun family outings and stuff. Like just like the little things like that, even just going for walks, picnics, you know, that sort of thing. Those are always fun things. But aside from that, like my favorite part of the day is like the bedtime routine.
Yes.
So like we put Brady to bed, we read him a book, and like we'll hang out in his room with him for like at least a half hour and just like talk to him, let him play with his toys and have fun. And literally like just winding down that part of the day is probably my favorite thing. I don't know why. It's just something that I look forward to. Other favorite things about being a mom, I don't know, just like I take so many pictures. Like I'm that person.
Oh my gosh.
Like I think I have like over 35,000 pictures on my phone. I'm not even kidding. And like most of them are of my kids. But yeah, just like having all the pictures. I'm like super sentimental when it comes to like filling out the baby book and stuff like that too. So like I get joy out of like little things like
that. But those things are so special, and it's something to look back on. And I mean, in the moment, you don't, it doesn't feel important because it's happening, and you're like, oh, they said mama, or they did this.
Right.
But then in a few years, or 10, 15 years, in you can just look back
when
on
you,
that.
Back when you miss it and realize you took it for granted, that's when those things are going to matter. So that's why I like to just document everything.
I love that.
Yeah. So what about you? What's your favorite thing?
I think, I mean, I'm new to the game, but I think that the bond for me is so special. And like you said before, like being a boy mom, I think there's just something super special about the bond between a boy and his mom. Mm-hmm. And it's just so special just to have a little person who is just waiting for you, and you know, you work hard all day and you just know you're gonna see their face and everything's gonna be okay.
Yeah,
they're kind of, they become your safe place.
Yeah,
you're their safe place, but also they are your safe place. Just watching them grow and doing things that make them happy, and you know, like with Bennett, I'll, you know, try to teach him something when he finally learns it. It's something that might seem so little to somebody else, and I'm like, he said bubble. And it's just like so exciting.
It's very satisfying.
It's just, you know, there's always something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Something new going on. And
there's so many firsts. They never end. Like,
And it's just so special, the bond between a parent and a child. It's really amazing and hard, and there's just so many emotions that go into it. But yeah,
there's a lot of hard times, but it just makes it that much more special in the end. Just knowing that you really did that and you got through it and you raised a good human.
Yeah.
Despite everything.
Yeah, that's the goal, right?
Yeah.
To raise some, you know, good men, some good boys.
Yes. So next question. What's the first case that you remember being obsessed with?
Yeah, so I think I touched on this a little bit earlier, and it was the JonBenet Ramsey case. And I don't think it was obsession in a way that, I think at the time, I think when she died, you and I probably would have been only like 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
But it was in the media a lot.
I feel like it's still in the media.
It totally is. There's just so many details, and especially when it's a cold case. And it's not solved and there's no answers.
And she was like a little blonde pageant girl.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So it was obviously all over the media. Like that picture perfect family and a little girl and she dies and there are no answers. And I think I was obsessed in a way that it kind of opened up the doors for, you know, wow, this story is disturbing, but it's also interesting. And I want to learn more about it. And it kind of just started the true crime obsession.
Mm-hmm. So my first case that I became obsessed with was Casey Anthony.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, like that. I think I was in grade 10, I want to say. Because it happened.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Trial happened in 2011.
Yeah.
So I would have been in grade 11, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, grade 11, and I remember, of course, coming home, and my mom, of course, was, like, all about the Casey Anthony case, so that turned me on to it. But I just remember, like, every single day after school, I would go home, flick on, like, Nancy Grace and CNN, and that's all it would be the Casey Anthony case. And, like, I just became so wrapped up in it, and, like, from there, like, every single detail, I had to know every single detail.
Yeah. Shout out to Nancy Grace.
Yeah.
She really has paved the way for
she
for
truly
women
has.
In, women in true crime.
She truly, I don't know if I love her or I hate her. She's one of those personalities, but.
Yeah, she is a lot.
She's
for
a
sure.
lot.
But she's herself.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
She's been through it, so.
Yeah.
But yeah.
She's an OG.
I can definitely remember seeing the Casey Anthony case.
Yeah.
It was all over the news.
Yeah.
And that's here in Canada too. So I can imagine in the States it was even more prominent.
Yeah, even in Canada it was like headline news. So
Yeah,
so that was definitely the first case that I remember being obsessed with. And then that just sort of got the ball rolling for true crime, other true crime cases. But Casey Anthony was the first one.
So next question, what case disturbed you the most, or a case that you just couldn't handle researching or hearing about?
Well, I hate anything that has to do with children. Like children being abused or dying. I mean, it's ironic that we're starting with Casey Anthony, but those ones really disturb me, especially now that I'm a mom, but they always have. Any vulnerable thing. So children, animals, old people, like anything like that, that is like a defenseless thing that other people are causing harm against. Like I just find that so disgusting.
Yeah.
And those cases just really, really disturb me. I can't even read them. And if I do read them, then it sticks with me for like weeks and I can't get it out of my head.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from that, a case that I recently discovered that has really, really creeped me out has been Israel Keys, which I think I brought his name up to you and you hadn't heard about him.
Yeah, so don't say too much.
I won't say too much, but it's crazy because a lot of people haven't heard about him, but he is literally comparable to Ted Bundy, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason that a lot of people haven't heard about him is because he made a deal with the FBI to tell him his secrets if they would keep his name hush. So that's why a lot of people don't know about him. But like, what he did was fucked. And he's like one of a kind. Like, he's like a different realm of serial killer.
We'll cover that case
at some point. But yeah, when I, like, I haven't even gotten into really everything that he's done, because I just have to like turn it off, because I'm like, this is giving me the creeps. And there's certain cases that I'll get really into, and like, I don't know if this happens to you, but it happens to me like quite often.
Yeah,
I'll get into a case that like really disturbs me, and then I'll start having nightmares about it.
Oh my gosh, do you do that? Oh my god.
And then like, I'll wake up the next day and like, I'll tell Nick about it, and I'll be like, oh my god, like, I had this really scary dream, and like, this is what happened. And he's like, you need to like back off from those cases. This is like starting to affect you. And I'm like, no, like, I can't stop. Like, leave me alone. But like, yes, like, when I'm reading it, it's like super interesting to me, but I don't realize that it's like actually like getting into my head to the fact that like, I'm literally having nightmares over it.
Yeah.
And Israel Keyes is one of those ones that has just sort of like, he's just demented.
Yeah.
So anyways, how would you answer that question? Yeah. What case disturbed you the most?
Just as a little side note, we're not always going to cover cases. So you'll see in our first two episodes with Casey Anthony that we're going to go back and forth, kind of like tag teaming the case. We're not always going to do it that way. So sometimes we're going to have an episode where I tell Kristen a story that she hasn't heard before, and vice versa. So that's why I was telling her to kind of hold off on telling me too much about it, because I want to be genuine. I want my genuine reaction.
So I'll tell her the story. I'll tell Amanda the story. And then as I'm telling it, she'll be reacting to it. So it's kind of like a different type of delivery, I guess.
Yeah, it's a different vibe, because you're kind of, you know, if the listeners are also hearing it for the first time, then they can resonate with what we're feeling. Yeah. So, yeah. So I think I totally had along the same lines of what you had said initially. Definitely children and animals and just vulnerable people or things. I just think it takes a really, really, really fucked up kind of person to torture or kill or hurt someone or
something that can't even defend itself.
Right. It's just, I think that part of the reason that it's something that we want to learn about is because it's so hard to understand how a person could do those things.
Right.
So, I mean, it's hard. And for people who aren't parents, it's, you know, prior to this, I could learn about things with children. And you think to yourself, that's so awful. It's a child. But when you are a parent, it kind of automatically, your brain goes to like, what if that happened to my child?
Right. You just like start picturing your child, and like, it makes it that much more disturbing.
Yeah. And it's sickening almost. It's like a,
it does. It makes me sick.
Yeah. It's like a pit in your stomach to think about, like, you know, people always think this will never happen to me, but you know, the more you hear these stories, it's like, you can't think that way. Mm-hmm. And that's a part of like, just to kind of sidebar, a part of the reason that I love true crime and I like to learn about these things is because I learn a lot about how to protect myself and how to protect my kids, right? Yeah. So, or my child.
100%. Like, I always tell people, I would rather be, like, know every bad thing in the world and be aware than be naive and live in a bubble. Because there are some people out there who just, they hear these stories and they turn a blind eye to it because they don't want to believe it's true. And then when something comes up, they're like, oh, that would never happen to me. Like, that stuff doesn't happen around here. And it's like, well, it does though. So like, wake up and smell the coffee.
Yes, exactly.
These things happen and there are monsters who live out there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you just need to learn how to protect yourself, especially as a woman.
Yeah. So I saw the other day you shared on our Instagram page about, you know, if somebody's going to kidnap you, you need to do everything in your power to not get in the car.
Yeah.
And when you shared that on our Instagram page, my mom saw it and she's like, I used to tell you this all the time. And I remember that.
Yeah.
She said, literally die before you get into the car. Because if you get into the car, whatever is going to happen to you is going to be worse than if you die.
Yeah. My mom, same thing. She's like, never, ever let them take you to a second location, because the moment that happens, like, your chances of survival basically plummet. And like, You need, Kristen, if something ever happens to you, you need to fight like hell. Yeah. Like, even if you die, you need to scratch the fuck out of them. Like, yeah. Let them know. Or, like, if other people see them, like, you better make sure that they have marks all over them to let other people know that, like, something happened, right? Yeah. Like,
it's like,
I mean, hope to God you're never in that circumstance.
Oh, I know. But that's the thing, right? These are worst case, super disturbing things. And it's just, like you said, it's just naive to think this will never happen to me. So I feel like there's a sense of comfort in learning about, you know, how these predators lure, you know, the people that they kill. Because then it's like, okay, well, I know that I should never fall for that. And I'm super aware when I go in parking lots in the dark. Yeah. Or as soon as I get in my car, I lock my doors. It's just like one of those things that if I know all of the terrible things, that maybe I can help protect myself and my family.
And I recently, I mean, this might sound crazy to some people, but just to put it out there in case you're interested, the Crime Junkies podcast actually has something on their website. It's like a PDF file. It's called In Case I Go Missing. And it's literally like a 27-page document that you can print off and fill out like every single detail about yourself. And it comes with like your passwords to everything and like information about like the make and model of your laptop so that if you were to ever go missing, like investigators could get into all of your accounts and like just have all the clues to track you down. So like I printed that off and I filled it out and I let my mom and Nick know like it's in this drawer if I ever go missing. I mean, like, knock on wood.
Yeah.
I'll never go missing. But just in case, that does bring me like a little bit of comfort to know that like at least the cops hopefully will be on top of it.
Yeah. It's like the, you know, the list that you investigators wish they had for every
but honestly person. Filling it out was also very disturbing because I'm like, I like this, I never want to actually have to think about this actually happening to me.
Oh my gosh.
But it's actually kind of useful to have. So all right, so moving right along, what are your favorite true crime podcasts?
This was a hard question for me to answer because I feel like A, I'm so picky.
Yeah, same.
And B, also at the same time, there are a bunch that I, you know, will listen to for a little bit and then I'll, you know, forget about them and then I'll go back to them, whatever. Mm-hmm. Number one, I don't know if a podcast will ever top Hunting Moorhead. I really don't think just the story. And as I said before, disclaimer, it is about pedophilia and it's so disgusting and disturbing. But everything that went into, you know, finding, without giving too much detail, without finding the person involved and everything after the fact and doing interviews, like when you have an interview with the actual person that committed these crimes, I think to me that's so interesting to listen to.
100%.
Because you're literally hearing from them what is going on in their minds. And that I just could not stop listening. And that was one of the ones too that my husband kind of, in his peripheral, heard me listening to it. And then he started asking questions and then he started listening too.
Yeah.
But that is my number one. So, but with that said, going back to the last question, that kind of got me down a little rabbit hole of podcasts about pedophilia. And it got to a point where I listened to one and I'm like, I can't do this anymore.
I know. Yeah. After Hunting Moorhead, I had to like take a step back from it because it is so disturbing. It's really, really good though. And it's really well done.
Right.
It's like from an investigative standpoint, like they're like basically doing live episodes as they're tracking down like
a person who is committing, obviously it's to do with pedophilia.
Right. But so you feel like you're like right along for the ride. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that one is definitely very disturbing. And obviously no one wants to think that these things can happen, but it was really well done. And same, like I would go on drives just to listen to the podcast in peace.
And that's how you know it's interesting. And it does, you know, it's not to say like, I love learning about pedophiles.
No.
They covered it in absolutely such not an interesting way, like you said. And I just felt like I need to know what happens.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like Canadian true crime. It's kind of one of those podcasts. It's like really facts only, which is one thing that I'm picky about because I do like a little bit of conversation, but not too much conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's another reason with this podcast, we want to try and find that balance of what we're both you know, interested in listening to.
Yeah.
Something Was Wrong is one of my favorites too. Yes. I feel like you told me about that.
Yep.
It's essentially a podcast where they, you know, they have real people come in and tell, sometimes they have them in there kind of retelling their story. And sometimes the girl who runs the podcast is telling the story of essentially something being wrong. It could be something, you know,
it's like somebody that like you dated, for example, like, and you didn't know that what their real personality was like. Like you dated a psychopath and you actually found out that they were a psychopath and yeah. like what they did and stuff. It's yeah, it's interesting. There yeah. are, I really like that one too. Mm-hmm.
I liked the earlier seasons more because I like following a story over multiple episodes.
Yeah,
same. So I liked that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I also listened to My Favorite Murder for a little bit. I find it's one that's kind of like easy listening. There's lots of conversation, different story every time. It's one that I'll kind of, like I said before, leave and come back to and sometimes just chuck on if I don't have one on the go.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, what are your favorites?
So I feel like My Favorite Murder is one of the most popular ones, but yeah. Shockingly, I'm subscribed to it, but I don't think I've actually listened to an episode of that one.
Yeah.
Which is sad. I should start. Crime Junkies, I feel like they're also super popular. Mm-hmm. So, but again, I feel like I enjoy some episodes more than others.
Yeah.
But I would say Crime Junkie, Hunting Warhead was a good one too, like you said. There's one called True Crime Society, and they cover more like relevant current cases. So their podcast is really good. Morbid is another really good one.
Yeah, I had that one written down.
Yeah, too. Morbid is good. But my, like you said, I really enjoy the type of podcast that you're like following along a story. And To Live and Die in LA. Have you ever heard that
yes.
podcast?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I can't believe I didn't write that one.
Yeah.
Down.
That is probably number one at the top
I
of my list.
I feel like you told
yeah,
me.
Yeah. So
it.
There's two different seasons and both yeah. are equally as good.
Right. Because the guy is literally, he's going and interviewing people.
Yeah. He's interviewing
and figuring
an
it out.
Unsolved case. And he's basically like the private investigator.
Yeah.
And he's like finding clues and interviewing like the main people in the case. And he's basically working along with the police. And like he's like a podcaster.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just the way that he formats that whole thing, it like keeps you on the edge of your seat. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so To Live and Die in LA is really good. Serial. Season one, I believe.
Yes. With yeah. Adnan,
yes.
Saeed.
Yeah.
That is such a good one.
Yeah. So, yes. Again, like, I really like those type of podcasts mm-hmm. where it's, like, a series. It's, like, multiple episodes on one story.
One story, yeah.
Yeah. I like those ones.
So, Someone Knows Something. Have you listened to that one? It's a CBC podcast.
I have it. I'm looking through my podcast app right now
yeah.
and it's here. But again, I feel like I might have listened to a couple episodes, but I don't really.
You should listen to that.
Which one? What's it about?
There is a different story.
Okay.
Every season.
Okay.
And it's the same idea.
Okay.
First of all, the journalist is amazing and he does the same thing as To Live and Die in LA. He goes and finds these people with these unsolved cases and he interviews them and he tells you a story about, you know, what happened and talks about the people involved and gets them sharing their...
Someone Knows opinion. Something.
Yeah.
Was there a season that was done locally? Something in Halifax?
Maybe, but I didn't listen to
that. Might have been a different yeah. CBC one. But
I haven't listened to that one in a while, but I think that was one of the first true crime podcasts that I listened to.
Yeah.
And it was good.
Honestly, like, I probably listened to at least one episode a day, I would say.
Yeah.
Maybe not like a full episode because some of them are really long, but like if I'm like doing the dishes or cleaning the house or just doing some activity that I just need some mindless background noise to listen to, like I throw on a podcast.
Yeah.
And it makes it like so much more enjoyable.
It's really,
of a task.
Yeah, it's such a great thing. I have about a 25-minute commute to work, so I get easily through an episode a day.
Yeah.
You know, on average they tend to be about an hour, but
yeah.
On my way I'm listening, on my way home I'm listening, cooking dinner I'm listening, if I go for a walk I have one headphone in because you always have to be aware of your surroundings. And I'm listening. Yes. Oh in my one God. Ear.
You're brave. I don't think I could listen to a podcast if I was like walking, especially at night. I'd be like constantly peering over my shoulder.
Yeah. So yeah, can you tell we like podcasts? I don't know. So
just a little bit.
Yeah. A serial killer or a case that you just can't get enough of.
So I know he is like super overdone, but for some reason, like Ted Bundy.
I had the same thing.
Yeah, like there's something, and like I don't know why, because like he's kind of a jackass, but
I mean, he is totally a jackass.
I just think it's just because like there's so much evidence and there's so much footage of him like talking, and like you really get a view into his mind and his personality. Yeah, you get
a sense of who he is as a person.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes me really like certain serial killers over others, is getting the opportunity to like really see inside their mind like that, and Ted Bundy is one of those ones, and not to mention he's fucking sick in the head.
Yeah, and he also is, at the same time, he's picking and choosing what you get to know about him.
Right.
And he's molding your perception of him.
He's very manipulative. He's smart. He knows what he's doing. Like, I think he was like a politician at one point.
Yeah,
like, he's not like a dumb person.
Yeah, no.
Which makes it that much scarier for me sometimes with certain serial killers who, you know, like have a brain in their head. They're not crazy. They're actually very, very smart.
Yeah.
They
know what they're doing. They're being charming in the right moments. Yeah. And
Ted Bundy. And I recently read a book called The Phantom Prince.
Okay.
And it was written by Ted Bundy's longtime girlfriend while he was doing the killings.
Wow. Okay.
And she didn't know. She had a sneaking suspicion kind of towards the end.
Yeah.
But the book basically is her version of like what their relationship was like. So you know that movie on Netflix, the one with Zac Efron.
Yes, yes, yes.
Shockingly Vile, whatever called. Yeah. So that movie is based off of this book, his girlfriend's like view on things. So it's interesting, and she tells certain stories about her times with Ted, that she kind of saw that flash of like the monster inside him.
Right.
And she tells us one story that she was out on a lake with him on like a canoe with her daughter, who I think was only like 6 or 7 years old at the time. And like he pushed her daughter off the canoe in the middle of the lake for fun and let her struggle in the water for like a couple minutes.
Wow.
While he was like taking pleasure in like watching her struggle and like seeing the fear in her eyes. And then he finally goes over to her and like pulls her out and is like, oh, well, what are you acting like that for? Like, stop being so dramatic. It was just a funny joke. But he would do little things like that over time. Yeah. And like she, like now knowing what she knows about Ted, she would say like, yeah, like I saw that side of him, but like he never acted his crimes upon her for whatever reason, but it's just really interesting.
I had him as well, so I'll throw my thought, like, especially with that, because I find, you know, as soon as you said that, I didn't know that, by the way, but as soon as you said that, I'm thinking, okay, what the hell? How do you stay with someone who pushes your fucking kid off a canoe?
Honestly. But
that's knowing what we know now.
But she is kind of a dumb bitch. Yeah. Though. Like, if you, like, not just saying that, if you actually, like, watch her speak and stuff, she's not, she was, like, one of those hopeless romantics, like, desperate to just have a man. Mm-hmm. And, like,
and
I don't know.
And he's also
very charming.
Yeah, he's like a sociopath. So he's just deciding, you know, he is the one who decides what you see.
Yes.
And he was probably so charming and like the perfect man.
Yeah.
And it was all just...
Exactly.
It was just a show.
She was on to him towards the end, though. And she ultimately was the one who kind of got him caught. So.
Yeah, right. Yep.
Yep. So, next question. Since becoming a mother, is it harder to hear true crime stories or swallow the details, and does it cause you anxiety?
Yeah, I think we did chat a little bit about this, but 100%. It's, sometimes, like, earlier we were chatting about something, and I'm like, okay, we can't talk about this anymore, because I just get in my head too much about it,
mm-hmm.
and as, you know, as a person who has anxiety, it's like, your thoughts wander.
Yeah, and we don't need anything else to add to the anxiety.
No, you're like,
here.
Hold up. No. I don't need to be picturing this as my kid. But like I said earlier, it's hard when you're a parent because when you hear stories about horrible things that happen to children, or you hear a story about a kid that gets kidnapped from they're at the fair or they're at the mall, it's just that you get that gut-wrenching feeling, like, have I looked away for a second? Like, what if I did that and that happened to my child? Mm-hmm. And I'm so paranoid that I'll have my son, Bennett, in the cart. We'll be shopping. And if I need to look over at something, I have my hand on him. That's how paranoid I am.
Same.
So yeah, it totally does cause anxiety. But like I mentioned before, it's helpful anxiety in a way because you're hyper aware and you're not going to turn your back. And it's so funny because I used to be that person that would say, oh, these people have their kids on leashes. And now I totally get it.
Yeah, you understand.
Because, I mean, if you have them on a leash, first of all, you know you're not they're not going to run into the road. And second of all, you know that you have a hold of them at all times.
Yep.
So that was like a little bit of a derail from the question. But yeah, it's definitely harder to swallow the details, especially with children involved.
Yeah.
Because you just can't help but imagine what if.
Yep. Yep. No, I totally agree. It's definitely like, even before being a mom, I was still disturbed by certain stories. But yes, since becoming a mother and knowing that you have this like thing to protect your child, who is like the most important, precious thing in the world to you, and knowing that there is monsters out there who inflict harm on innocent people, and knowing that that could be one of your children, it definitely does spark some anxiety for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So last question.
Yep.
Last question. Do you ever resonate with a killer? Not condoning their actions, but understand their why or how.
So straight up, no, I do not resonate with a killer, and I never will. I think what this person was trying to ask was like, do we understand like the psychology behind it, like how they get so fucked up to want to do these things?
Yeah.
And that's what really interests me, is like learning what turns somebody so evil. Like, were they born that way? Was it their childhood and their upbringing? Like, were they severely beaten as a child, and now they're in their adult life, they want to go out and inflict pain upon other people? Like, I understand it in that aspect, but I still don't think, obviously, I don't think it's acceptable. The only possible way that I would ever resonate with a killer and think that it is acceptable and understand why they would want to kill is if you're going to go out and kill a child abuser.
Yeah.
Like, if we could have like a Dexter, like, what do they call them? Like,
vigilantes.
Vigilante. Yeah. I can resonate with a vigilante.
Yeah.
But aside from that, no.
It's so funny because when I read this question, I started Googling people who kill pedophiles so that I could say, hey, I resonate with that person.
Like, more power to you, like, please.
Because,
kill some more.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think a good example of this to try to explain what I mean here is the Gypsy Rose case, where her mom had Munchausen's proxy.
Yeah.
And she was literally torturing her to the point where she was forcing her to have all of these ailments and disabilities, a wheelchair, told her she couldn't eat certain things, she had cancer, and there was nothing wrong with her, and she was, you know, behind closed doors abusing her to keep her this way. And then her daughter and, you know, some guy that she's talking to on the internet, and she ends up being murdered by them. And in your mind, you're like, obviously she got to a point where she couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, can I resonate with killing someone? No. But can I understand how they were, you know, Gypsy was so tortured and abused and became so mentally unfit that she thought that that was the only way out? I can totally see how that happened.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's extremely messed up, and it doesn't mean that it's okay by any
means. No, but you can understand it.
Like you said, it's like understanding when we're not talking about serial killers.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely interesting to understand with serial killers what is different in their minds than the, you know, quote, normal person. But when it's a, you know, a murder of passion or a case where somebody has been abused for years and years by a person, they end up killing them. It's kind of like that thought process of, well, what if they really thought that was their only way out of the situation?
Right.
Yep. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So that's like the resonation part.
Killing somebody that is harming you. Like, I almost find it is a form of like self-defense almost.
Yeah. Because
I mean, it's extreme, but
you know, I don't know who knows this case. And I, you know, there is a series on this case that is redone by Hollywood actors, but it's really unbelievable to see the things that this woman was doing to her daughter. And she couldn't leave. She couldn't go anywhere. And so you're kind of thinking to yourself, well, I can understand why she got to the point where she felt...
That would drive you crazy.
Yeah. The only thing is that I think in the middle of the night, this man came. And she probably could have just left with the man. So she didn't need to kill her mom.
Right.
But you know what I mean? It's just that mental piece of, you know, they're thinking like, if you aren't dead, this is never going to end.
Right.
So that's just my piece about that question. But, you know, never, you know, condoning it. But
yes,
in some cases...
We're not condoning killing anybody on this podcast.
In some cases, understanding that they felt it was their only way out. Just in those special cases where it was, like you said, kind of self-defense or protecting themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Not people who go on killing sprees or
just
kill people.
Yeah.
Just to kill them.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is our last question.
Yeah, so I think we're going to end it there.
Yes, and we do have a 2-part episode coming out that we're going to post on Casey Anthony, so make sure you tune in for that. We have been posting some stories just asking our followers on Instagram to recommend cases, so if you have any cases that you want us to cover, definitely like shoot us a DM or whatever, and we'll put them on our list. But yeah, we're super excited to be doing this podcast, and we can't wait for you to hear what we have for you.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.